welcome back as we get ready for another episode of Roll Digs, the official podcast of Montana Tech Athletics. I'm Paul Panisco, and again, welcome back. This time around, we're actually going to check in with Dr. Les Cook, the 12th Chancellor of Montana Tech. He arrived here July 1st of 2019, and he is retiring officially at the end of the month. Obviously, his time here at Montana Tech has seen huge growth on campus, not only as a campus, but personally, and has seen some struggles. Obviously, when you come in 2019, there's a little thing called COVID you have to deal with right out of the gate. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll talk to him about what brought him to Butte, Montana, and more. So again, thanks for joining us. Roll Digs with Chancellor Les Cook. Les Cook, how you doing?
I'm doing spectacular.
how many? So this has got to be like senioritis, kind of almost. How many days? How many hours? Where are we at?
I don't know. I mean, I'm here through the end of June, but it's a lot of in and out. And
is it air quoted in? Is it I'm in till the end of June?
I'm in till the end of June.
Yeah.
Am I here till the end of June? maybe not. it's a lot of fun right now. Actually, it's a lot of. Going around thanking people and just, you know, celebrating the good things that we've accomplished together and acknowledging my appreciation for just showing gratitude to people for all the good things that have happened over the last 6 years and, you know, looking forward to what's next.
Does it, let's start 6 years wise. I assume, like anything, It feels like it's been way longer than 6 years, and then in other respects, it probably feels like it's been, you know, weeks rather than years.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's, you know, you're packing up, we're going to Utah and we're going to Michigan, and so we got stuff to go two places, mm-hmm. and I keep getting stuff mixed up. It's like, well, is that box? Did I just pack that box that's supposed to go to Utah, and I put all the Michigan stuff in there? It's like. But I vividly recall, you know, coming out here because we kept our home in Michigan, and there was a lot of stuff that I was looking at. I'm thinking, why am I taking this there? This is going to stay here. And so there are a lot of times when it does feel like just yesterday that we were packing up and moving to Butte, and here we are packing up and getting ready to leave.
Yeah.
So it's definitely bittersweet, and a lot of there's a lot of things that you come across that bring a smile to your face, and you know, yeah. It's like, wow, we did that. That's good stuff.
Heck yeah. So. If you don't mind, let's talk about how it all came about you getting to Butte, Montana. Were you called by a headhunter? Were you contacted by somebody? Were you seeing and in conversation with somebody? How did the tech like job opening, if you will, come to across your radar? And then kind of walk us through that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I had been, you know, at Michigan Tech, I'd been there for 16 years, and, well, 15, I guess, when I started getting into the job process. But we got a new president, and, you know, every time that you have changes, and I had said in 2011, I had an opportunity to leave and go to Boise State and got offered the job and didn't take it. And I had a great president that just every time that he thought that I had an inkling that I might leave, he would give me more responsibilities. I mean, I had student affairs, and then I got student affairs and all the enrollment pieces, and then I got marketing communications, and then I got advancement, and then I got athletics, and then I got advancement. And so I had about 350 staff reporting to me. And so it's like I had a great gig, and it was just, yeah. And it really prepared me well, I think, to step into the role of being a president or chancellor, because you had everything with the exception of the academic side of the house. And so I had colleagues that had told me over time, they said, you ever thought about being a president? I'm like, I don't think I don't know if that's something that really appeals to me, because I have to find a place where I can be me. And I had a good gig going there. I could be me. I had great staff. We'd build a great thing. But you get a new president and you think, oh, maybe I should. And I had thought about it before, I guess, and had taken a look at a couple of different things, but didn't really pursue anything. And then I had a colleague that was a president, and she was a student affairs VP at Bemidji State before she became a president. And she reached out to me and said, hey, there's this great job out in, this job looks really interesting. It looks like something that you should think about. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And then the next thing I knew, I was hearing from Jim McCormick and Janice Fitzgerald at AGB and said, hey, you've been nominated for the chancellor position at Montana Tech.
Okay.
I was like, oh, okay. And so I took it. I obviously took a deeper look and said, "Wow, this is awesome! I mean, it's in a great place. It would get us back to the West. Our daughter was, you know, she was at Michigan Tech at the time and had another year to go. And I'm like, this is a great opportunity to think about, you know, taking a leap. And so, why not do it? And she had nominated me, and so I put materials in. And long story short, it came out. You know, did a Zoom interview, actually an airport interview. Didn't do, what am I talking, Zoom? We didn't have Zoom then. This is pre-Zoom.
Oh, yeah, come on.
But
now.
We did an airport interview in Bozeman, and it was pretty intimidating. It was like you flew in the night before, and you stayed at a hotel adjacent to another hotel. You went over, and you were in this holding room, and then you went in this big room. It's like an interrogation room where there are like 20 people in there. You sat in the middle of the room. They fired questions at you for an hour, and then they got up and said, you're done. And they went into another room, and they said, how do you think you did? Okay, we'll be in contact or we won't. And so I actually had been at a conference in California, and I had planned a ski trip in the middle of this conference and going back to Michigan. And I flew to Utah, skied all day the next day, and got a call that evening from Jim McCormick, said, hey, you're moving on. And so it was great news. And it was just like, wow, this is all coming together. A lot of fun. Came out, did a campus interview, and it just felt so right. I mean, it's just, I think about, you know, people, I have so many people that say, that will ask me about, do you know this guy? You know, they're sending me videos all the time with the Greenisms, you know, yeah, with Coach Green. And they'll be like, do you know this guy? I'm like, yep, I do know this guy. And he actually, I laughed because when I came out to interview, we were in the Copper Lounge, and, you know, people were firing questions at me. And I was just being my Les Cook self, you know, trying to respond and give good answers and a vision and so on. And so Coach Green's in the back of the room, and he gets up and he starts walking towards the mic. And I'm like, oh, no, I've heard all about you. And I can't remember what he was asked. It was something about athletics in the community and so on. Yeah. But it was a riot. So, yeah. So that's, yeah. And then I was offered the job, and we started we moved out here in June and started in July of 2019. And it's been a whirlwind ever since.
Yeah.
Been a lot of fun.
What do you remember about that first visit? Like, what stands out to you as far as when you first get to Butte, you first get to campus? Does any of that resonate, or do you have any remembrance of the first time you were on campus?
It felt like we were coming home. I mean, it's like, I remember the morning of the interview, actually. So Steph was with me, and I, you know, I get up and I'm nervous. I'm at the hotel, and I drive to campus, and you come up the hill, and you come through the arch, and it's like, but I remember how excited I was about that day. And then when we got here and arrived on campus, and we went to the house and, you know, checked in with Donna, Vicky, who are still, they're moving some stuff out and so on. And it just felt like, you know, it was so welcoming. I did come back for I was here for like 4 days, I guess, in May, and spent time on campus meeting with people. And that felt really good. And I think that really helped.
Yeah.
Because it laid groundwork. So you know, you had a better understanding of people, and people were, I guess, just very willing to do whatever and, you know, give me ideas and answer questions and so on, because they wanted us to be successful as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned when you were in Michigan, the idea of the job, were you always, what was the end goal for you? You know, when you graduate high school, you get into college, you're political science at U of U, right?
I was at Utah State.
Or Utah State, I'm sorry. Yeah. That political science is one of those, like, metallurgical engineering to me that looks really fancy, but you don't really have a clue what it means.
Most people don't, and that's why the country struggles the way we do. We got a lot of political science people that, if we had more engineers in Washington, D.C., we'd be better off, probably.
Maybe. But what was the goal? Like, when you get into college, what was your end goal? Where did you want to be?
So I grew up a little ranching community on the Utah-Nevada border. So I'm dating myself, but I was 9 years old when we got electricity.
Okay.
In 1972.
Okay.
So we had a generator, a light plant, and my goal was, I was really, I mean, as a farm and ranch kid, loved animals. I'm like, oh, I'll be a veterinarian. That sounds good, right? So I get to college. I'm taking chemistry from Chuck Van Orden, which we called Chuck Van Boredom back in the day. And I didn't know shit about chemistry. I'm like, how am I going to do this? You know, how am I going to be a veterinarian if I don't understand, no one understand chemistry?
Yeah.
And so I had grown up in 4-H, profound impact on my life. You know, I reflect on this oftentimes, and I have a couple people in my life that have been very instrumental in helping me get to where I am. Well, a lot of people, but
yeah,
a couple more 4-H, the 4-H agents. That
those really early
in
influences.
Nevada.
I mean,
yeah,
everybody has those when, you know, you have influences at every stage,
yeah,
but
exactly,
those real significant ones when you're early, shapeable, you know, that really steer
and
you.
I'm still in contact with them.
Yeah.
And it's just, but it's, I thought, well, I'll become an extension agent because I want to work with kids. I want to be, you know, I want to feel like I'm actually doing something and being able to give back to society in some way. And I think that there's no better way than doing that, you know, than being able to help others find their way and make a difference. And so that was kind of what I changed my major to animal science, I think, at that point, because I thought, well, I'll be an extension agent.
How were you a year in, or how long were you in?
I was a year in.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I was very influenced also by FFA.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, maybe ag education makes more sense. So I went from pre-veterinary science to animal science to ag education. And as part of my ag education classes, I took some business classes. I'm like, oh, yeah, business.
Did
and
it
I'm thinking, maybe I should go to law school. Everybody else is going to law school. I think I should go to law school. And so then, so I take business classes. I take business law. And I'm thinking, this is speaking to me. And then I had to take the American Civilizations courses, you know, which I think there were two classes you had to take. I took history 170 and political science 110.
Okay.
And this guy, Mike Lyons, was phenomenal. And I'm like, oh my God, I should do political science. That will really prepare me to law school. So I switched my major to political science. Long story short, I was done almost done with my bachelor's degree in just a little over 3 years. And so I'm thinking, what do I do now? And one day I'm walking, and I was real involved in campus. And the VP for student affairs put his arm around me one day. We're walking down the hall. And he says, you know, have you ever thought about a career in student affairs? And I'm like, student affairs? Like, there's a job that's, you could do student affairs?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. I mean, get your master's degree. You could, you know, there's lots of opportunities for you to think about higher education. He said, I know that you thought about law school. I know you thought about working, you know, as an extension agent or working with kids. He's like, these are grown kids.
Yeah,
working on campus, and you have good interactions with people and so on. And he's like, you should think about this. And so I thought, what the hell? I'll stay here. And so I got a master of social science, and you got to basically design it to meet your needs. And so it was really heavily focused on educational psychology. And then part of it was focused on recreation education. So, yeah. And it all worked out.
It's just like a huge light switch.
Five years. I was 23 years old, graduated with my master's degree, had bachelor's and master's degree, and loaded up a car and headed to Nebraska for my first job at University of Nebraska in Omaha.
Okay.
So
what was your job title?
Student activities advisor and fraternity life or something.
Okay.
So I was the advisor for all the fraternities.
Okay.
And I was very involved in Greek life, so I'm like, oh, this will be fun. Well, it's a hell of a lot different when you're sitting in the chair on the other side of the desk as opposed to being immersed in Greek life with, you know, out
doing
Greek week and that kind of thing.
Yeah, much different perspective.
Totally different
perspective. From one side of the table. Yeah.
So
how did that change you or influence you moving forward from there?
I mean,
there has to be an adjustment period from, like you say, going from one side of the table to the other, and you probably see yourself changing a little bit through that process.
Oh, definitely. And I think, and I see it now. I look at some of the young professionals that we hire, and it's, you know, from professionals in student affairs to grad students that are working, you know, a GTA working with students to young coaches. And it's just, you have to separate yourself from, you know, you're not a student anymore.
Yeah.
So you have to act a little bit more like a, you know, like an adult. But it was, I think that the interesting part, Nebraska, UNO was a very much a commuter institution. It's completely different nowadays. However, it's a very thriving, institution. But it at the time was what do they call it? Dodge. Did you not know this is Dodge High? Cause it was on Dodge Street in Omaha. And there were a lot of the students that I was working with were, you know, 6, 8, 10 years older than me.
Okay.
And so they're like, who are you to, you know, especially the programming side, the student life side, the fraternities guys were, I mean, most of them were my same age or such, but it was a great experience for me. And it was a time of a lot of deep reflection. Cause I moved, you know, uprooted myself and threw everything in my Volkswagen GTI and headed to Omaha. And then I'd furnished my own apartment, you know, that kind of thing. And and it's, I started thinking, do I really want to be here in the flatland? And, you know, it wasn't.
So just the topography was more like where you were at was the question, not whether it was the right position for you on a campus.
Right.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, being a commuter institution had a large impact on me because Utah State is, even though it's a, you know, at the time was like 13 or 14,000, it felt very residential. I mean, most of the people that were at Utah State, mm-hmm. with the exception of, you know, some of the kids that grew up in Cache Valley, most of them were there to go to school. And Omaha was, you know, you had a lot of students that were a lot of working adults, a lot of, you know, just had other things going on in their life,
gotcha.
Different priorities. And so I was there about a year and then I decided I'm going to go back to Utah. And so I went back to Utah and kind of flim-flammed around for a couple months and I interviewed for a job as an advisor at Salt Lake Community College, which was originally a technical school. All the two-year schools were trade tech, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and they had the Board of Regents in Utah had made an effort to take all those 2-year institutions and make them build them around a community college model where they put in Associate of Science and Associate of Arts degrees because it's a lot less expensive to educate young people or anyone at those institutions than having everybody in universities to start.
Yeah.
And so when I started there, we had 11,000 students. When I left 8 years later, we had 22,000 students. So we doubled in 8 years.
Hello.
And really, you know, that campus is, it's an amazing institution. I mean, they have, I don't know, at their high, I think they're around 50,000 students spread out through most of Salt Lake Valley. And they have 12 campuses now. It's just, and one of my dear friends, she retired from she was the president there for, oh, I don't know, like 10 years, I guess. And mm-hmm. she retired a year ago. So, and she was one of those people that said, you need to go be a president. I'm like, I don't know. I always told her, I said, it's hard because you want to be someplace where you can be yourself. And that's one of the things that when I came here, it just felt so normal. I mean, I felt like I could be myself and people would accept me as who I am.
What did that Did those conversations start happening when you were at Salt Lake Community College? The idea of, you know, you need to go be a president. You need to is that kind of when that got that thought process started? When did you flip the switch and decide that you need to take another step?
So I got my doctorate while I was at Salt Lake Community College, got married, had kids, did all those things, and then went to the University of Utah and was there for 7.5 years. And that's as I was kind of moving up and, you know, had my doctorate and was having different experiences, there were different people pushing me to, oh, you need to go be a vice president. And after I had been a senior student affairs officer for a few years, people were like, you should really think about being a president or a chancellor. And I didn't think it was, I mean, early on when I decided to pursue a career in higher ed with student affairs, my end goal was to be a dean of students. And okay. then I realized, as soon as you get to be a dean of students is kind of a crappy job. It's like being an assistant principal because you're dealing with all the judicial, yeah. you're dealing with all the discipline stuff. Yeah. It's not fun. Yeah. I mean, you think, oh, dean yeah. of students, oh, you know, and then you realize it's more like Dean Wormer, where you're the badass than it is about,
yeah.
you know, doing things.
You're bad cop all the time.
Yeah.
There's no good cop in
and
that.
So it's not all that it's cracked up to be. And people always also told me when I said, well, I think I kind of want to be a senior student affairs officer. And people are like, oh, you don't want to do that. If you do that, you'll lose all your contact with students. And I will, to this day, I will say that for me, the most meaningful part of my journey has been the contacts that I've had with students. And yeah. That's bar none been my highest priority always, is the interactions and the student first mentality and the ethic of care. And just having relationships. It's like, if you're a VP, you can spend as much time as you want getting to know students and being involved with them and helping them find their way and learning from them. And, you know, and it's the same as a chancellor. I mean, it's more limited because your time is different, but you can prioritize that and choose it to do how you want to do it. So,
And I don't think anyone would, I think that's the first thing anyone would say thinking about you is that you obviously the student life and the student success is a huge part of who you are. And you know, you make sure you're out in it and yeah, it's a tremendous mold. And I think it's like a good business. You know, the CEO had better know what's going on with not only the people that he surrounds himself with, but he'd better know what's going on the ground floor as well. And I think it's successful, certainly.
Well, it's definitely been a lot of fun. I've been fortunate because I've had incredible mentors and colleagues and friends that have helped me every step of the way. And when you falter and have one of those oh shit moments, you have people always that you can call upon and tell you, well, you need to. And my dad was obviously an old cowboy, and he was always always told us, you kids, when you get bucked off, you just dust yourself off and get back on, and you suck it up and move on, you know. And so luckily I've had colleagues that have essentially said that for most of my life, just in probably a kinder, gentler way.
Yeah.
I mean, some maybe not, but it's been, I've been so blessed. I've been part of a professional association, NASPA, which used to be NASPA stood for National Association of Student Affairs Professionals, and now it's national. It's NASPA Higher Student Affairs Educators something or another.
Yeah.
But I've been involved with that organization for about 35 years, close to 35 years. And when I started at Salt Lake Community College, my VP came down to my office one day and threw an application or a form on my desk and said, hey, you need to go to this mid-level institute for student affairs administrators. And I'm like, mid-level? This is like my third year of higher education, you know? And so I went to this student affairs, this mid-level institute that was hosted at Weber State, met some of the most profound, impactful people, involved people in NASPA, and they launched me. I mean, I'm so grateful that I had that opportunity. Because there are people that were, I mean, they were a big deal in the association, and a lot of them were in our region, in Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Washington, and I got to know them, and they got me involved, and it's like been the best thing ever. I have this gratitude that is ginormous for the people that I got to meet through this association,
you don't do anything alone. You know, no. I mean, there's no way in the world you can do anything alone. And the idea of the people you have around you and the people you lean on are what's important.
Well, the coach of the Eagles, you know, he said after winning the Super Bowl, he's like, we're only great due to the greatness of others. And that's, I am for sure.
Yeah.
That is, you know, it's like not only takes a village, but we're only successful because those that are around us help us get there.
All right, so I, you know me well enough that I would love to be able to stay on a straight line, but I'm going to bounce all over Blue Hill. Talk to me about your dad a little bit. So when you're going to, you know, you get electricity when you're nine. Your dad probably only knew farm ranch. Is that pretty truthful?
Yeah. So he died in. So he was born in 1918 and he died in July. He was born in September of 1918. He died in July of 2017. So he was almost 99. He was a rough and tough old cowboy, leathery, looked like an Ace Reed cartoon guy or maybe the Marlboro Man.
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised, well, he's born in Lehi, Utah, but his uncles and everybody kind of migrated to Ibapah, which is the little ranching community that I grew up in. His dad died when he was 9 years old of tuberculosis.
Okay.
And it's like I remember him telling us stories about, you know, how when his dad died, they laid him out in the back bedroom and put cheesecloth on him and so on. And the undertaker came out and prepared him and they had a funeral like 2 days later kind of thing, you know, horse and buggy. And it's just, and so he had a brother that was 15 years older than him and then a sister that was 10 years older. Well, his brother, when my dad was in high school, they boarded out, so he had to go like 100 miles away to Tooele, Utah, and was in school. He was a sophomore. His brother got pneumonia and died, just kind of out of blue. And so my dad dropped out of school, sophomore in high school, and went home to help run the ranch.
Okay. Well, and that's kind of where I was
and
like.
Stayed there, basically. Okay. But after he and my mom got married, he took a job. He came to Montana, and he worked in the Big Hole out on a ranch. Somebody that he knew had connections up here. I can't remember who. But I know they lived in Twin Bridges for a while. And they lived in Dillon for a while and in Wisdom. And they were the only time out of his whole 99 years that he lived outside of the little ranching community I grew up in was he had about 5 years up in Montana. And so when I interviewed here, I shared that, you know, the Merle Haggard song, Big City, Turn Me Loose, Set Me Free Somewhere in the Middle of Montana. That song always resonated in my, every time I'd hear it, I'm like, oh, I think that because my sisters and brother were all babies or little when they lived here. And I was not thought of yet. And so that's why I said, this is my opportunity to, not that Houghton, Michigan was a big city. I mean, it's obviously a hell of a lot smaller city than Houghton, Michigan, or than Butte, Montana. But yeah, so he's obviously had a profound impact on my life. He was a character. He was, you know, he always said a guy's word and handshake is the most important thing that you have. And it's like strong handshake. And I always tell our students, because there's so many of them that, especially here, like our line students, they like crush your hand when you shake. And it just makes me, I tease Greg Kegel at Northern because it's like shaking a cinder block, you know, when you shake their hand.
Yeah.
But that was always something that was really important. My dad.
Was he pro education? Was he one of those that was like, you have to do it, you go?
So he was to some extent, but my mom, my dad dated my aunt, and I don't know what happened, but then he ended up dating my mom, so her younger sister, and they get married. But my mom's family were the more well-to-do family in the valley. Like my grandfather on my mom's dad moved to the valley and just was really smart with his money and investments. And during the Depression era, he had a lot of money and he bought out people that were struggling.
Yeah,
and became like he had, you know, had a lot of land. He had all the sheep, ran all the sheep on the mountain, so on. And so my mom went off to college, was a school teacher. And went on and also got a master's degree. And so they were, and her older sister was really, really pushed me to education. I mean, I was the first one in my family to actually get, with my siblings to get my bachelor's degree. But I just was, I have different DNA than any of my siblings.
Really?
I got the overachiever gene, apparently. That's what they tell me. So I don't know, but it's I don't want to be a ranch kid my whole life. It's hard work.
I mean, it is.
You know, people ask me about retirement, and they're like, so, you know, obviously, you know, this is going to be just going to be a big change for you. Like, I don't remember not working. You know, as a kid, you had chores to do, and you were hauling hay, or you were fixing fence, or you were out moving dams, irrigating.
And it wasn't work; it was just life.
Yeah, like it's just life. That was you just did it. It wasn't like you questioned any of it. You just did it. I mean, sitting on a tractor all day long during the summer baling hay, or
I would assume that in retirement, one of the things I would worry about in your shoes is the idea of making sure your time is taken for things. So I don't sit still well either. You know, I'm not a person that can. Honestly, 2 day weekends, let alone a 3 day weekend, I start to like lose my mind. Like I have to have places to put myself. Is that a worry? Because like I say, that's all you've known your whole life is you get up in the morning and you're either outside fixing fence or whatever the case is to now you're always a go. I can imagine life afterwards is going to be pretty much pedal to the floor as well.
Yeah, I don't sit well. and I'm probably, I mean, the retirement part is not, it's not a concern for me. I'm 100% sure that it's a big worry for Stephanie. She's like, oh shit, what am I going to do? Exactly. He's home now. Maybe I'll get a job. You know,
I can
see
that.
Like, Home Depot's looking really good.
And they have good insurance, okay. I'm told too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have some things cooking that I think that will keep me engaged somewhat. I've been involved with, there's an organization out there called the Leadership Institute, which is a national nonprofit that was formed in the 80s that does, they do leadership training programs for college students. And I've been on their board of trustees for a few years, and I'll stay involved with that and keep some things going there. And then, I don't know, there's stuff that keeps, that has me interested. So
yeah, I got you. Well, let's turn back to our focus here locally again, if you don't mind. Let's start. We're obviously sitting in the Hyper. We're in the athletic department. Let's talk about the athletic side of things. You know, when you come to Tech, when you look at student life, you know, with your, you know, your heart and your soul kind of being student life, what part does athletics play in that?
Athletics is. I mean, it is one of the, it's one of the different compartments of the heart, I guess I would say, because it brings so much to campus. And it's, I don't, you know, I think that having strong athletics programs they're incredibly beneficial for an institution, and institutions that have maybe don't have as robust opportunities for student life or the student experience, athletics can bring that value that is differentiates an institution. And I think, you know, I look at Montana Tech, and so when I was hired, one of the things that the commissioner and board and others said, you know, they said, we want you to focus on growing enrollment, but with your background, we really need you to focus on building the student experience and what that looks like and what it feels like. And it's interesting because some of our students had, I guess, in the search before I was hired, they said, well, we don't know how to have fun here. And so that was one of the things that resonated, I think, with some of the search committee members. It's like, how do you build that piece? And so I think the things that we've done with the addition of some of our sports, with also, you know, really trying to accelerate things you know, build the student experience. Athletics is a huge part of that. I mean, it's been integral to us helping to build out the student experience. And, you know, I remember when I interviewed here, Carrie Vath told me, she was a former dean of students, and she said, you know, students don't stick around on the weekends at Tech. We're a kind of a suitcase campus because people come in on, you know, Sunday nights or Monday mornings, and then they're gone on Thursday afternoons, and the parking lots clear out on Fridays, Saturdays. Parking lots don't clear out anymore.
No.
Here. And part of it is because of, we've got stuff going on that's not only, I mean, home football games are obviously a big draw. I think having athletic events on the weekends are a big draw, but it's also the doing things like the outdoor program and, you know, different events, different clubs and organizations and different research opportunities that students have. They're drawn to stay here more. So, but the, I couldn't be more proud of where we are with the athletics and the investments that we've made in student athletes. And the thing is you see students like Abby Clark, for example, you know, who's knocking it out of the park with track and field and also being on the volleyball team. And then you go to the undergraduate expo. And she's knocking it out of the park there too.
Yeah,
you know, with the research they do, and that's the beauty of Montana Tech students is they're all, you know, many of them are like that.
Yes.
So
yeah, it's you know, you aren't just a person that stands on the sidelines and kind of watches things develop. You certainly had a big hand in the Frontier Conference expansion. You know, we're this coming year, the Frontier Conference is going to see what is already an awfully large footprint when it comes to football, going to get a huge footprint moving over to the Dakotas and Nebraska. Talk about from your perspective, what those schools, the changing demographic of the Frontier Conference brings to the entirety of the Frontier Conference and to Montana Tech, if you don't mind.
Well, one of the other things when I was hired is that we need to do a better job telling our story and expanding our brand. And I mean, that's a natural expansion of your brand right there, because people get, you know, you get recognition of, you know, you're in Valley City and you're like, Montana Tech, where is that? Butte, Montana. I love Montana. Let's check into that, you know? Yeah. And so I think that obviously, the expansion of the conference helps us in that way. It helps to bring additional recognition to Montana Tech, but we're really strong. We're a strong athletic program. We're a strong conference. Yeah. I mean, the Frontier Conference has always been, it's been small but mighty. And I think I don't know where we are. I was talking to Scott Crawford about this the other day. I don't know where we are as far as the size of our conference now, but we're one of the largest conferences out there in the NAIA. And I think that helps us. That's powerful right there.
Yeah.
From a competition standpoint, it's obviously helps us be more robust in recruiting. Our footprint is larger. I mean, you know, we're playing games in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yep.
That might, you know, there might be students there say, you know what, I want to get out of here. I'd love to go to Montana. Yep. And so it helps us.
It's amazing how quickly that happened.
Yeah. It's not only attracting the students that are thinking about being a student athlete, but it puts an idea in students' minds that maybe I should think about a smaller school, and Montana seems great.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, there's a lot of value in not only expanding the conference, but also what it does for the institutions that are part of that conference and expanding their recognition. It's expand your footprint as far as a recruitment strategy goes. And yeah. So
you bring up something that we have whined about for decades is the idea of, you know, we know how strong we are, you know, or at least we think we know, let's put it that way, as far as the Frontier Conference goes. And we didn't get a whole lot of national respect, again, our words and thoughts. But when, you know, we expand to the West with football, now we expand to the East with football and all sports, all our court sports, our voice is going to grow an awful lot louder over the next few years.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, our programs are already strong. And think about the competition factor now. It's like, you know, people look at, you know, there's a top, you know, basketball players are out there going to be like, wow, I should look at Montana Tech. Yeah. There's top golf prospects out there saying, yep, why am I not looking at, you know? So, and it's, you know, track and field and cross country have really, I'm so proud of all the things that they've accomplished. And, you know, with our, with Chuck, the new head coach, and it's his energy and passion for this sport is going to do nothing but help us excel.
Well, and you've seen that from word go. You know, your time here has seen the addition of cross country first, and then the track programs right on the heels of it. And it has done nothing but explode. I mean, you look at the Frontier Conference championships and, you know, individual national champions, the individual All-Americans, again, that were added this year. In such a short time, those programs have just done so incredibly well, not only locally, but on the national stage.
Yeah, it's been super exciting to see. So people ask me, they're like, what are the hardest decisions or the decisions that you feel like were the most monumental in your early time at Montana Tech? And I said, well, you know, coming in, I remember we were in a budget meeting and Matt Steppen says, well, one of the things we could do is if we added cross country and track and field, he said, we could probably within a year or two have close to 40 or 50 students. Well, a year or two, we had closer to 80 students, and we were kicking butt, you know, and it's just, and I think about that. And so it's like, we were sitting and it's like, oh yeah, we should do this. Little did I know at the time that, you know, these kind of decisions, I couldn't just make them. They actually had to go through the Board of Regents and so on, but I did make it. And then we went out and hired a coach, and then the commissioner said, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I didn't know I had to get permission from anybody. So lucky it all worked out.
And beyond worked out. You know, you think about the impact it has had, not only you take away the All-Americans, the national championships, and the Frontier Conference championships. You remove all of that from the equation, the amount of students that it has added to the bottom line here at Montana Tech since its start has been monumental. And you look at, you know, over that same kind of time span, you look at other campuses taking huge cuts in students, whereas our enrollment just kind of continues to trend upward.
Well, we added cross country and track and field. We got a soft serve ice cream machine, which is also a big deal.
Obviously, I was going to end with that.
But you
that
could,
it was...
we could, yeah, we could go there at the end, but we did that, and then we got our second PhD program in that first year, and we survived COVID.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Those are three things that we did that were pretty impactful that first year, and it's funny how some of those little things, I mean, you downplay them, but some of those little things actually add a lot to the institution. And so and the COVID piece, I think that, you know, obviously nobody steps into any of these roles and says, oh yeah, we're going to have a worldwide pandemic and what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And but the campus, I have said all along that it was probably one of the best icebreakers and team building exercises that we could have had because everybody pulled together and it was faculty and staff were, you know, so willing to do whatever to make it work, to help students be successful. And the students, you know, I had colleagues from other institutions are like, well, don't you have all this pushback and people are whining and people are not doing this and there's people are protesting. I'm like, no, because they're all good people. And we're all in this for the right reason. Yeah. And they know, I mean, they totally, I mean, I got a few nasty emails, but
and you're going to doing anything.
Fewer than, I mean, I probably on one hand had that many emails that could count of people that were pissy about something.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I'd have to think that in that scenario, it almost reinforces your belief of students first, because if we're going to get through this thing, it has to be because of the right reasons and because we're doing it for the students, because we're doing it for the faculty. It really feels like something like that, you almost come out better because of your approach to education and the importance of, you know, the student life.
I mean, I remember in our messaging, I said, we need to reassure everyone that we're looking out for everybody's health and safety first, obviously, but to some extent, we're all learning with you. Yeah. This is learning by doing, and some of it maybe as my 4-H coming back in my head, because it's like learning by doing, and you just, you know, to make the best better, and we're not sure what the best better looks like right now with the whole situation. We're gonna protect your health and safety as much as we can, and we're gonna do what we think is in the best interest of the students and our campus as we move forward. And we did, and we survived. We did okay. We actually, I think, did better than a lot of places because we just kept moving forward and not, you know, we weren't over dramatic, but we were honest and upfront and said, you know, we don't know what the hell is going on either, but we're going to figure it out as we go.
Well,
trust us.
Yeah. And so, there wasn't, I think the idea of everybody kind of working together to get there helps a lot.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
I just do. I think the way you go about that is a big deal. When you look at your 6 years, what are the important wins for you? Like where's your pride come from? You know, you look back and you're like, all right, that you kind of hang your head on those moments. What are some of those?
I think that, you know, the one thing that is really, and it's just because of who I am, is the student experience piece. And the, if you look at our strategic plan, and I mean, student success is the number one goal in the strategic plan. And that came from the strategic plan team. That didn't come from Les Cook.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something that we as a team of about 40 people said, you know, whatever we do, it has to be focused around student success. Was that not here before? No, it's always been here. We re-emphasized that, I think, in maybe a different way. And so there's been some, I think there's, you know, it's taking the good things we do and basically adding more strength to that focus of student success. I mean, if you look at Montana Tech's values, the very first statement is that says that students are the reasons we exist. And I've, you know, sometimes, I mean, there's research pieces, there are industry partnerships, all those things are important. But at the end of the day, it's about educating and preparing good people to go out and have lives that matter and make a difference, not only for their families. It's expanding the wealth of their family as far as not like the wealth money-wise, but the wealth of the social capital, being of value to industry, being of value to their communities, being good people and making a difference. I've always said, for me, and I've used this my whole career, it's making a difference in the lives of those that will make a difference in the lives of others. And I feel like that's what we do. And that's, if I think about what's been the most important to me is hopefully we've been able to continue to build on that. And through things like expansion of, you know, a couple of sports, seeing the success of our students with Goldwater scholarships, having almost a 100% placement rate for students that apply to medical school and professional schools, doubling the size of our career fairs. I mean, our career, I was just at a meeting this morning. We have 90 people registered for the career fair that happens in September. And my first year here, we were celebrating having close to 90 people show up to our career fair. We're 4.5 months away from having our career fair.
I'm not going to lie.
Things like that make me super happy.
I'm already worried for career fair when we get the new gym built and the idea that we're probably going to be outgrowing both gyms combined and looking for additional space for career
exactly.
fair.
It's a really good problem to have.
It is a
great
problem.
Having more students that want to live on campus than we have the capacity for, that's a really good problem to have. I mean, my first year, we opened up the Student Success Center, which was a huge addition. And thank you to, you know, previous people that were here before me and the foundation and friends and donors that have given generously to help fund that building and that space. I mean, it's such a great addition to campus. Yeah. But we were struggling to fill up spaces. I mean, we could have taken one of our buildings, Prospect or Centennial, offline that first fall and the next fall because we didn't have, you know, they weren't. And now we have, you know, we're at capacity and we're
scrambling
oversubscribed
space,
with having students. So those kinds of things make a difference. I mean, we've had incredible success with fundraising since I've been here. You know, the weekend before I started, Joe McClafferty had, you know, arranged an opportunity for us to go up and meet some of our most generous alumni and friends, you know, up and we went to Whitefish and went on a golf cart. I'm riding on a golf cart with Ryan Lance and my golf game is not the best, as Mr. Steppen can probably reminds me very regularly that I suck and that I should take golf lessons in retirement. Otherwise I might end up getting divorced because my wife is a really good golfer.
Okay.
But anyway, you know, I told Ryan, I said, please don't judge my leadership skills by my golf game. And Ryan said, you know what, if you're a shitty golfer, that actually means that you probably spend more time at work.
There you go.
But it's like being able to establish those relationships early on and then have Ryan and Lisa and their family give us such a generous gift to establish the Lance Scholars Program, the Lance College of Mines, the Energy Chair, you know, those kinds of things have been substantial.
You know, and I think it speaks volumes to your idea of the student life here on campus, where the amount of Butte kids that are living on campus. You know, I think about when my wife and I were on this campus, and that was never would have even been a thought, to be honest. I mean, there's just no way. But the idea of wanting to be on campus, wanting to be part even deeper of that tech life, I think speaks volumes to that.
Well, I think that they see, they come up here and they experience what it's like, and they see, you know, the students having fun, and they're, you know, there's a dance in the courtyard, or there's, you know, whatever's going on.
Yeah.
And they're like, I can actually move away from home and I can live in Butte and have an away from Butte experience by being on the campus. And that, I think both of our kids. So when I was the VP at Michigan Tech, you know, both of our kids chose, of their own free will, you know, that they were going to go to Michigan Tech because they knew it would prepare them for success. And both of them lived on campus. And they didn't have a choice in that matter.
Yeah.
I said, you're going to stay here, then you're moving on campus. And they had, I mean, our son, we literally didn't see him. He came home once to do laundry the first semester because something was going on but it was like he was away at college when he lived like 2 miles from home, you know. Our daughter came more frequently. She would actually reach out to me and say, hey, can we do lunch? But
Wow. Okay. You don't hang that over his head at all, do you? That you were like, you know.
Well, I remind him.
As you should, as any good parent should.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to most when you go to life wearing slippers and the robe? I kind of picture you in the
smoking
Sopranos.
A cigar.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of picture you in that, you know, like when Tony Soprano would walk out and get his paper where, you know, you've got the full robe on, the flip-flops and...
I think the thing that I'm looking forward to the most is being able to be involved in some things that are meaningful and not feel rushed. I mean, it's like there's always something else you got to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, yesterday I was on a Zoom meeting actually for the leadership board of trustees, and it was, you know, I went to the gym and came home, got ready, and I just threw on shorts because I'm like, I'm on a Zoom meeting. Nobody's going to know if I have shorts and flip-flops on.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was so nice. It was, you know, I have a standing desk, so I just stood, and it's, I thought, this is what retirement can feel like, being able to be involved and, you know, be able to pick and choose the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
As opposed to, and I am so grateful just for the opportunities that I've had. I can't imagine better life than what I've had, and it's not only for me, but it's also been for my family. And you know, it's, I mean, Stephanie is, when I got this job, she's like, there's no way in hell I want to be a first lady, and she's done an amazing job being in that role. I mean, she's an introvert.
Boy.
You know, and she has taken one for the team more than I can count, and it's just she's gracious, she's committed. She's tried to be involved where she can, where she feels like she can give back, and she likes to be behind the scenes. She doesn't want to be out and, you know, doing the other. And our kids are really good humans, and a large part of the reason why they're such good humans is they had a good mom that, you know, supported mm-hmm. them and embraced them and everything, and good people around them. I mean, we had, you know, it wasn't uncommon for us to have a couple hundred students over for a dinner when I was, you know, when we were back in Michigan, you'd have all the orientation leaders over and the residence life staff. And that would end up being, and we'd have them come in shifts. Well, it's, and then you have hockey players over, you know, for dinner in the winters. And it's, I always said that, well, it's not like you had the misfits over, you know, it's like you had, they were always good students that were having an impact on your kids. And so I feel like I'm so grateful for all of that. And the people that I've been able to, that have, I've worked with have been, you know, they're your work family. I mean, I got a kudo board, which I've never heard of a kudo board, but I got a kudo board email yesterday from colleagues at former colleagues at Michigan Tech and professional associations that I've been involved with. And Joe Cooper helped get this, but like close to 60 different people sent me. And it just,
that's awesome.
I mean, it
good for you.
It touches you because you're like, and then, I've done something right somewhere along. Yeah. It's, and it just, it feels so good. And I'm so grateful for all the people. I mean, it really is, has been an incredible run. And I'm excited about continuing that run just in a different, maybe at a different pace.
Yeah, at a different pace. That's the deal. And I have to, I'm going to apologize publicly because I know that you and I are very similar in a couple different ways, and one of them is we're both emotional people. Like I am 100%. I completely, like I wear my heart on my sleeve, and it's an awful thing at times, but I love it in a lot of ways as well. And you handled your final graduations so much better than I would have given, that I gave you credit for, or than I would have, because you made it through those and I would have been a bloody wreck. So I'm raising my coffee to you. I'm proud of you. I thought you did marvelously I know I would have just, I would not have gotten through it. And you did admirably.
Well, thank you. It was a challenge. I mean, I think that it probably the part that it was kind of like, the ice bath challenge, you know, when you get the bucket of water dumped on you.
Yeah.
I went the day before commencement. I was home, kind of just going through my remarks, and I was a sobby mess. And my wife says, "You need to suck it up. This is your last commencement. People don't want to hear you out there boohooing. And I've told you many times before, you're really an ugly crier." And so I'm like, "Okay, I got to be better than this." And so I think that helped me actually in a lot of ways because I was worried that I was going to be a muddy mess.
And honestly, that's a good point because Shannon probably would have kicked me in the ass and told me the same thing too, to be completely honest.
It's good to have those people that kick you in the ass and, you know, a little reality check here and there.
Yep, I do quite often. So
I actually, one of the, when I was, so the VP of student affairs at Salt Lake Community College. You know, I was there for 8 years. He had a huge influence on my life. Judd Morgan was his name. And he would get up at different events and activities throughout the year. And he cared. He cared deeply about people. And he wore his heart on his sleeve. And he would always get, he would always get boo-hoo-y. And I sent many messages to him over the years. And I didn't get that way until I had kids. And then I think once you have kids, it really it changes you. And so I've sent him many messages over the years. I'm like, man, I am so you today. I was a mess, So, but I think it's okay to show your human side.
I don't know. And maybe it's because of the way I'm wired, but I prefer it. I'd much rather have that than the robotic drone, I'm not built that way. So, anyway, that's enough of that. Chancellor Cook, Dr. Cook, thank you. Thank you for everything. 6 years. And what do you see the future of this campus looking like?
I feel like that Tech has such incredible momentum right now, and it's what a great time for this institution. We've had our years of greatness, and I think there's such a bright future ahead. Obviously, we're celebrating our 125 years of incredible things happening at Montana Tech, and the next 125 years, I think, are going to be even more monumental. We've had record-breaking fundraising. And I think there's with a campaign planning and process, I think that is something that is just going to add to helping us move the needle forward. We're in the process of finishing a master plan that is going to really position Montana Tech for probably the next 20 to 50 years of doing some really awesome things. You got a new chancellor who has a ton of energy, and he's got, I am so happy that we are where we are with Chancellor McLean. He's got a great vision. I think that there are right people in the right place. The athletics programs have continued to expand with a Frontier Conference expansion and with really dialing in on what Montana Tech does best, which is preparing people in science, technology, engineering, math, professional fields to go out and make a difference. And it's just a huge opportunity for, the next 10, 15, 20 years. I think that all those things are teed up. We've got a really robust strategic plan. We have a great master plan that's coming to fruition. Should be finished up with that this summer. Main and engineering halls, just the structural kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And our enrollment is, we're bursting at the seams as far as people wanting to live on campus. And I think that the opportunities are ripe. There are a lot of institutions that would give everything they have to be even close to where we are today. And so I think that it's an incredibly bright future for Montana Tech. And I couldn't be more proud of the people, the faculty, the staff, and the community. I mean, this community is unlike any other. I mean, they value what happens here, and they're so supportive of, our people as far as faculty and staff go, but even more so of our students, and know how important it is to have them here and doing good things.
Chancellor Les Cook joining us here on Roll Digs before he skips off into retirement. Our thanks to Chancellor for stepping in and joining us here, the 12th Chancellor here at Montana Tech. And of course, the 13th Chancellor has been announced. He's been on campus quite a bit to this point. He'll be joining us full time in July. But Dr. McLean is taking over at Montana Tech. And who knows? Maybe we'll get him on here and we'll meet him and learn about him a little bit as we get ready for the school year that we'll be here before we know it. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks as always for joining us here on Roll Digs. Coming up, we have actually some fun stuff on the way. One of my favorite humans in the entire world will be in town, and I'm going to pester him endlessly as Sindhu Diallo will be in town on campus helping out with Coach Adam Hyatt's camps here over the next couple of weeks. And I'm going to sit him down. We're going to talk about his time in Qatar and talk about where basketball has brought him. It's been a little while since I've talked to him. So really looking forward to that. Another one that we're discussing that could be a lot of fun is getting all of our kind of media people and the different aspects of game prep and how the game situation works. We'll sit down with Tom O'Neill, who, of course, is the best PA guy known to mankind. We'll also roll Mr. Josh Margolis into the mix. Of course, TV personality here in Southwest Montana certainly knows his stuff. And then on top of it, we'll get John Wick in, who is a tremendous photographer and obviously just another one of the best people you were ever going to meet. So we're all going to sit down. We're going to talk about what game days look like differently for all of us. Talk about some fun history and things like that. So certainly something to look forward to. Again, my name is Paul Panisco. Thanks for joining us here for Roll Digs, the official podcast of Montana Tech Athletics. And yes, sooner or later, Athletic Director Matt Steppen will probably join me. Have a good day.